There was at least one notable absence in the chorus of issues that was raised during the last presidential campaign. How to provide for those millions of Americans who receive some kind of welfare assistance. Now, welfare reform was passed under the Clinton administration in the 1990s. People of all political persuasions, from President Clinton to Speaker Gingrich, said at the time that the system that had grown into place was broken. It seemed to give people a stake in staying poor to claim benefits. It discouraged work. It encouraged dependence from generation to generation. Jason DeParle, a senior writer for the New York Times, has covered urban issues for that paper since the 1980s. He's now written a book that tries to examine how welfare reform has worked and not in actual lives. His book is called American Dream, Three Women, Ten Kids, and a Nation's Drive to End Welfare. Thanks very much for being with us.
Happy to be here, Scott.
And we're also joined in the studio with one of those women, Angela Job of Milwaukee. Thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
One of the things you write about, Jason DeParle, is the way the welfare reform debate got redefined in the 1990s.
Yeah. Isn't that fascinating? Ronald Reagan attacked poor people for abusing the system. He talked about welfare queens driving welfare Cadillacs. People were living high on the hog. Newt Gingrich, 20 years later or 15 years later, didn't make that criticism at all. He didn't say people were living well on welfare. He said they were living terribly and that it was welfare's fault. Clinton's hope, I think, was that in ending welfare, we would create a more positive politics of poverty, that once the public saw low-income people as workers, not shirkers, not as freeloaders, the anger towards poor people that we felt that was evident in the politics about welfare, that would dissipate and a more generous era would ensue. I think he was about half right. I mean, the anger towards welfare and towards poor people has disappeared, but the subjects of poor people has disappeared.
A lot of Americans have the idea millions of Americans were moved off of welfare rolls into productive jobs. How true is that?
There's no doubt that the tougher welfare laws of the mid-1990s were successful in moving low-skilled women into work. The employment rates surged, and, you know, Angie's a great example. She had been on public aid for 12 years. Mm-hmm. She had no high school degree. She was just the kind of person that lots of us feared wouldn't be able to find and keep work. And within 6 months, she was off the rolls and on the job as a full-time worker, as a nursing aide. The second set of questions is how much work did for her, how well it paid, and there I think there are some disappointments, but certainly the law worked as an employment program.
Angela, let me turn to you. Tell us about your family.
Well, I have three boys and a daughter, and I have a little cousin that I'm adopting now. Mm-hmm. We have hard times, but we make it.
Take us back a little bit. You were living in Chicago for years.
Yes.
And then moved to Milwaukee.
Yes.
Recall for us why you made that move.
My kid's father had went to jail for one. I was with him for 8 years. By myself, it was really kind of hard trying to live there. It's very expensive in Chicago. Mm-hmm. So Milwaukee was the choice.
Prices were lower than in Chicago for things like housing,
yes,
food, for that
very
matter.
Very much so, yes.
And also at that particular time, this was before welfare reform, Wisconsin was, by reputation, more generous.
Very generous, so we heard. It was easier. The checks was more than what you was getting in Chicago, plus the food stamps. And at the time, I had been working, but I was working like at Church's Chicken or Popeye's Chicken and stuff like that. And trying to live in Chicago with the welfare check there and the little money from the restaurant, it wasn't going to make it.
Mm-hmm. Scott, you were asking Angie about the move from Chicago to Milwaukee. She and Jewel, her cousin, moved to Milwaukee in order to go on welfare, of course having no idea they were moving to the place that would become the end welfare capital of the world.
As no doubt you're aware, one of the things that kind of triggered welfare reform in Wisconsin were people in Wisconsin who would say, look, folks from Illinois are streaming across the border and they're getting welfare benefits and taking advantage of the system.
That's right, they was. Because I have known people to say they live in Milwaukee, we weren't even living in Milwaukee, we're still in Chicago getting checks. I'm not mad at them for cutting it. They should have. You know, sometimes you have to make a stand and make a point. There's nothing wrong with that. But it's just, you have to go about it in a better way for people who really don't have anything. What about people who have children? What are they supposed to do with their kids? You just have to just think it out a little better.
Tell us how your life began to change when welfare laws were tightened in Wisconsin and then, of course, federal movement came in.
I never paid no attention to it, the politics of the matter. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to come to Milwaukee, get a job and work. Okay, when I applied, they told me I had a work program. I had no problem about that. I did it.
This is in Wisconsin. They said that the work program was in exchange for any assistance you got, you had to.
I wanted to get out and do something. So that was fine with me. Went to school, got my CNA license.
I'm sorry, your what license?
Certification for nursing assistant. Found me a job and worked. It made me feel better about myself. I enjoyed it, and I still do.
So you welcomed the chance to work. You welcomed the chance to get, you had, as I recall, had not graduated high school.
No.
Welcomed the chance to get some kind of certification that would help you. Get is what, after all, a nurse's age.
Provide for my family.
Yeah.
I had to do it. You know, it wasn't no big deal.
Also, yeah, not to put you on the spot, but you have a, you're a very generous woman. You take people into your family.
Yes, I do. Because everybody needs help. I've been there. It's not right. Even though my house is turned upside down, you got a meal to come to. You know, then you might not have lights or gas every now and then, but you had somebody to talk to. Mm. You had a place to lay your head. So you can get up on your own feet and make it.
May I ask how much money typically you earn per hour as a nurse's aide?
Now I make about
$10.25.
Scott, one of the things I was astonished to discover about nursing aides is they get injured more often than coal miners. Mm-hmm. Isn't that an astonishing thing to realize from all the lifting you do? Angie says they told me they in the break room that sit around and talk about their backs.
We do talk about our backs, our arms. I have a girlfriend now who don't do nursing assistants because her lower back is out. You know, she can barely even walk around. You know, while I work at, it's like a rehab center also. So you have people come in there that had car accidents, who can't walk, that you have to help get their strength back. You have people that's sometimes really kind of cruel, you know, really mean. You overlook that. Just try to reassure them that, you know, I understand how you feel. I'm just here to help you out. Just give me a chance to help you. I have been called a nigger. Don't touch me, you black. But that's okay. People just send their ways. You know, think about it. If I take care of people that's about 80 or 90 years old now, then when they was growing up, they was really kind of prejudiced. But I'm the one that's doing it. I'm the one that's combing your hair, making you look nice. I'm the one that's talking to you, walking you around, lifting you up, just laughing with you. And they understand that after a while. You know, and that nigga becomes thank you. So it's pretty neat.
Just a practical question. So you earn a little over $10 an hour. What does that provide for?
Rent, clothing, utility bills, groceries. We really don't provide too much of nothing, but we make it off of that.
So what do you have to do without?
Plenty of things sometimes. Yeah. Kid might need shoes, might need a coat. And then, even though you're sitting there in the dark, like, got them gym shoes on your feet, my light could be on. You know, you're happy about that. But you get paid again. It works everything out.
Scott, Angie out-earned nearly 9 out of 10 women who left the welfare rolls in Wisconsin. You know, it doesn't economically get a lot better than Angie's situation for women leaving welfare. And I think she's underplaying a little bit of the hardship she experienced. She lost her electricity 3 times in 3 years. She lost her health insurance for 3 years, though she was providing health care all day long for other people. And the house ran short on food, I think, more times than I could count. It was something Angie's too proud to talk about a lot. When I would ask her, she'd say, "Ain't nobody starving in here," you know. But I slowly began to realize a lot of the fights, the tension in the house, were really fights about food.
Well, you say in the book that it's as we measure these things, her life before welfare is reformed and after welfare is reformed is more or less indistinguishable. Working tough minimum wage jobs, hard to get by, generous woman taking care of a large family. That didn't change when you go past that point.
You could tell a version of Angie's story that says, gosh, she's off of welfare, on the job, she even gets a 401k, what a great transformation. Mm-hmm. But I think that comes closer to the truth to say that before the law passed, she was a low-income single mother raising kids by herself in a dangerous inner-city neighborhood and struggling to keep the lights on. And after the law passed, She's a low-income, single mother, raising kids by herself in a dangerous inner-city neighborhood, struggling to keep the lights on.
Welfare reform was signed, and one of the effects that occurred just really a couple of years down the road, and the Clinton administration was proud of this, is that poverty rates declined in this country.
They did. They declined precipitously. Some of that, I think, was due to the welfare bill. More of it was due to the strength of the economy itself, the, the poverty rates. But the poverty rate is a quirky measure that leaves out a lot of things, and you can move from just under it to just above it, which is what a lot of people did, including, for that matter, Angie.
Yeah, yeah.
Angie had been at maybe the 95th percent of the poverty line and moved up to the 102nd or 105th percent of the poverty line. And, you know, in a day-to-day living, that you barely notice that.
What would help your life now?
I really don't know. Well, it might seem like a horrible life to other people. It's not horrible to me. My life is fine to me. And we live it one day at a time. You know, we don't have any insurance. I would like to have insurance that if I fell down these stairs, that would I would be set for life. But I don't. And I don't be too much dreaming about it.
But
I don't think like that.
I'm going to disagree with you, Angie. You do think like that because one of the things
I would like
me,
to have that, yes.
You worked incredibly hard,
yes,
constantly to try to find a better paying job.
Yes.
You bought a car. You tried
yes.
to find jobs in the suburbs.
Yes.
You were at one point commuting 30 miles away in van that always left you stranded in the suburbs at midnight, 30
yes.
miles away. You tried everything you could to increase your wage. There ought to be a easier path.
Yes,
for
it
people
should
to
be.
Use the skills they have.
Yes, it should be.
Okay, then we're on,
see,
we're on point there.
You're sweet. You have very high expectations. But I just take things the way it is. I just dream right now that my kids get it. That they receive what I didn't receive.
Well, Angela Jobe, thanks very much.
You're very welcome.
And Jason DePauw, thank you very much.
Thank you, Scott.
Jason DePauw's new book is American Dream, Three Women, Ten Kids, and A Nation's Drive to End Welfare. And if you'd like to learn more about Angela Jobe, you can visit our website, npr.org. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.